All right, hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. August 20th, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it's great wherever you are at. It is a warm one this morning. Just got back from a fantastic run. The run wasn't great, but I'm glad it's completed. My legs are a little sore. I ran yesterday and did a kettlebell workout yesterday. So, of course, this morning my legs are a little sore. But, you know, went with it, just took my time, paced myself, ran into the neighborhood next door to us and saw one of those cool robotic lawnmowers. It's just out there cutting grass. You know, where I live, unfortunately, you know, we definitely have some seasonal neighbors. A lot of people live in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania. Or up in Maryland or, you know, somewhere, New Jersey, and come down here as a second home. And so having that, they don't have or don't want to, right, have someone cut their grass. So I guess this guy bought one of these little remote control, not remote control, it's just a robot, right? Robot lawn mowing machine. It was doing a nice job cutting the grass left to right, great angles. Nice and slow. I got to look into it. I kind of, you know, that would be nice. We have a little bit of landscape lighting. I installed it, so of course it's done sort of half-ass. I mean, the lighting's not, but there's a wire, you know, there's a box that has a timer, a solar timer, and that's plugged into the house. And then, of course, the wire that runs from that runs across the backyard into the woods, which lights up the woods. And that wire is just laying on the grass. I mean, I could bury it, but I just get worried that if something happens to it, then I have to unbury it. So, and I'm also just slightly lazy, so I'll just go with that. But I'm afraid that this lawnmower may chop that wire. So I got to look into it. I can also, you know, do a little bit better job about holding the wire down, which also might be an idea, but that would be cool to sort of have this little machine, and it's in no big hurry. It's just slowly cutting. I might look into it. Very cool. But yeah, that was fun. Got the run done, came back home, did another kettlebell workout. If you're a person that's sort of, well, here, I'll describe myself. I'm just a guy, just an average guy. Probably 15 pounds overweight. I'm doing some running and hate the gym and was looking for something that might bring, you know, a new exercise, something to sort of break it up a little bit. You know, I started that little kettlebell workout. If you're looking for something like that, check it out, man. The kettlebell is a great little exercise. When I don't do it, I don't feel as good. When I do it, I feel fantastic.
Well, I fall
Believe, Seether. I'm obsessed with this band, and I just saw September the 16th coming up. They're playing at the Freedom Mortgage Pavilion in Camden, New Jersey with, and it's Stained, Seether, Hoobastank, and Hinder. That sounds really good. I'm a freaking big fan of all those bands. I'm obsessed with Seether right now. They're so good. I love that guy's voice. I've said it before. He is the band that I hope Nirvana would be one day. And what do you want to talk about? So I went to the meeting yesterday, and it was a great meeting. We had some visitors from Akron, Ohio, the home of AA, and it was really cool. And, of course, the guys shared and talked about, of course, you know, Bill's story and Bob. I only know the story of Bill and Bob from what I've read and then the movie I saw about Bill. But, you know, I've heard different things. You know, Bill, I think turns out Bill was a lot like the rest of us, right? You know, he had his ups and downs. He had his challenges. A little full of himself. I don't know if he tried drugs. I've heard, I think, that he experimented with LSD. That could be wrong. I don't want to start any rumors. But it just sounds like he was, as much of the face of this program and as much gratitude as I have for this program and those guys, I think they were just a lot. We were all, you know, pretty fucked up people. And, I do love... how, you know, I look at how their story was and reflect to see if I would be the same way. One of them was, you know, how they used to bring people into the house, right? Furniture would get broken, fire was started. You know, you were dealing with the bottom of the bottom. These were not high bottom drunks. They were, you know, out of the gutter, out of the insane asylums. They were struggling, and the wives would be out waiting for them, and that's sort of how Al-Anon got started. You know, Bill's wife went outside for coffee and cookies with the women outside waiting for their husbands. And then that's sort of what, you know, began Al-Anon. And I'm sure there's a lot more details, but, you know, that's the gist of it, at least in my mind. That's what I think about. But, you know, they talk about this, you know, this pilgrimage, right? These people that travel to Akron, Ohio, and to see Bill's house on, I forget, it's called... what's the day? Something day. It's a day. It shows you how much I'm into it. And not recovery day. It has a name. But, you know, these people, it's a pilgrimage to Bill W.'s house and Bob, who has 12 steps that lead into his house and this and that. And you could sit where Bill sat and all of these great things. And really what the message was about was service work. You know, I remember when I first came in this program, I would see, you know, I came in 97. I've seen a lot of people. I haven't been sober since 97, but I've been either one, two, three steps away from this program, either a little farther or not far, but always sort of right around holding on, right? And after drinking after 4 years and then coming back and going to meetings and just sort of bebopping along. Finally getting back in, really in 2006. Haven't had a drink since 2006, but changing my sobriety date in 2008 because of the pain pills. And just been kind of cruising along, and I've seen many people, and I can think of a handful of people, and some stand out more than others. One guy used to come to meetings with a backpack full of every book and literature that he could get his hands on. And he would come in and with his backpack. I've seen people who come in with notebooks, writing down notes. I've seen people that overanalyze the words. I've seen many versions of this program. You know, I've seen crisscross meetings, pillow meetings, bagel meetings, beach meetings, sunrise meetings, sunset meetings. And now we have, and we've always had, you know, people that go to Akron, Ohio, to see, you know, the founder. Oh, Founders Day. That's it. Founders Day. Makes sense, right? And listen, I think it's great. But that doesn't keep you sober, and that doesn't make you any more sober, and that doesn't guarantee that you're going to stay sober. You know, I don't particularly think, and maybe they did, I don't know, but when Bill W. and Dr. Bob were alive, that one day they would hope that people would make pilgrimages to come to their houses. And it's always kind of, and it's never said, it's unsaid, but there is this sort of vibe, and it could be me, but it almost feels like if you haven't gone to Founders Day, if you haven't gone to one of these big, you know, century meetings, you know, and done these things, that your chances of getting sober aren't as good as theirs. And that could be me. I don't know. But I can tell you, the guy with the backpack and all the books, he's not around anymore. And I have never been to Akron, Ohio, and I personally don't have any desire to go to Akron, Ohio. And the fun thing for me was the place where we were at yesterday is a sobriety house that I walked to in 1997, so 29 years ago. Yeah, it's not been 90 years or whatever since, you know, AA started and all that was back and then. But I have a lot of history in just this little house that we were sitting in yesterday. You know, and I've seen many faces, and I've seen trends, and I've seen, you know, leaders, and I've seen, you know, the way the place has been arranged and rearranged and painted and cleaned and furniture changed, and I can tell you, through all of that, all of the faces that have come through that room, not many of them are still around. Now, granted, a lot have died. I came into the program in 97, and there was a lot of old timers. And I think, obviously, old-timers are important because they sort of set the tone of the meeting and, you know, remind the newcomers, sit down, shut up.
You have nothing to say.
My sponsor said, you just sit there and you have nothing to say. I said, that's perfect. Thank you. I'll do that. But, you know, they guided us. And, you know, all of those people pretty much have now died because it's 30 years later. Right, 30 years is a long time, so we've lost a lot. But a lot of people, the backpacks, the, you know, the pilgrimages, the overanalyzers, a lot of those people aren't around either anymore. And I think that, and listen, I'm not trying to be negative, but heading to, and no one, I guess, has ever really said it, I'm going to Akron to see where, for Founders Day, because I need answers, right? Because all the answers that we need are in the big book, in the 12 and 12. And then how it works. Rarely have you seen a person fail who has not gone to Akron. I just don't know, you know, it is, there's a lot of things that have changed. Very, very multifaceted version of me, many things that have changed. And I remember someone said, you don't like this meeting, take a copy of the steps and the traditions and go start your own. And if you read the steps, it doesn't say anything like you must carry backpack. It doesn't say you have to go to Akron. It doesn't say anything. It just says the only requirement for AA is a desire to stop drinking. And the guy that's been there one day has one day more than the guy that hasn't been there at all. I remember early on, I said, what can I offer? You have to be of service. And I said, well, what do I have? You know, I don't have any time. I don't know shit. What do I got? What am I going to do? And somebody said, you know, if somebody walks in here that doesn't have any time and they end up talking to you, you got 4 days. That's 4 days more. How'd you get 4 days? That's a story. And from one guy with 4 days to another guy with no days, those two relate, right? They're not far apart. How'd you do it? I just came home. I just came to the meeting and sat down and had some coffee and did it again for 3 more days and didn't drink. I'll try it. That's service. You know, the meeting yesterday really talked about that 12 steps. Having had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, our job now is to be there for the next alcoholic. And I shared. I go, I don't know if it's true or not, but it almost feels like they put that in there because they knew that one day we would get better. I would get better. And I have gotten better. You know, when I walked into this program and they said, do you think you have a drinking problem? I said, I do. Do you think you want to try to make some changes? I do. And I could sit there and talk your ear off and tell you about all of my problems and how life has been unfair. But times have changed, right? You know, that's one of the worst things, right? One of the things that we praise and raise up and focus on is this amazing time. Time. But it's the biggest, I think, enemy of recovery is time. Because that day when I walked in with those stitches, it was the most humiliating day of my life. My life sucked. I couldn't get it together. It just hasn't been fair. I just need help. But if you asked me today, I'd be like, I don't really remember. It's been a while. I remember when I made that phone call, and as I mentioned in the podcast yesterday, to Marvin Lipscomb, and I called him and I said, Marvin, I need help. My heart was broken. My spirit was through the floor. I had nothing on the horizon. I had thrown it all away. I had come in a broken man, fixed myself through the program and the 12 steps, sort of, right? Built a life, built a wife, built a career, and then proceeded to toss it all into the trash can. I got a quick version. I got a quick 3-year version of it. When I first came in the program, I had nothing. Right? I was like, well, whatever. But 3 or 4 years later, coming back into the program, I'm like, I've lost it all. You know, my wife had left, taken our child. I've lost the house. I'd lost my, you know, I'd lost everything. I'd lost my job. I'd lost everything. And that's when I made that phone call. But it's an interesting service. I remember early on in the program, my sponsor says that you can come in early and help set up the chairs. And I was like, okay. Right. And I remember coming to my first meeting, going home. You know, my meeting started off with my week in the hospital and then this outpatient program. But once I was out of the hospital, you know, I had to go to meetings, or I got to go to meetings. I mean, at that time, I had to go. And so I went to that first meeting. I remember going to work. I went home. I took a shower. I put on fresh clothes and I went to the meeting. And I could tell you, that was the highlight of my night. Because up until that day and up, you know, through that day, up until that point, it was just, you know, working and hot and dirty. And going to this meeting, this was the highlight. And I remember I got dressed and I went and people hugged me and they shook my hand and my sponsor was there to introduce me. This is Tom. He's new. He's going to be here. How you doing? And I just remember like, man. Like, I probably made more friends that night at that meeting than I almost had all of my young adult life. And so the next day, it was time to go to another meeting, and I was like, yes. And I went home, and I took a shower, and I put on nice clothes again, and I went to a meeting, and I did it over, and I did it over, and I did it over, and I did it for 120 days. I did 120 meetings in 90 days. Because it was time for me to be better, and I was going to prove it. But early recovery, that was better than anything that I was doing. I had nothing. After that meeting, I went home. You know, back in those days, we actually would go out for coffee. We'd go eat food. We'd do stuff. Luckily, I had a nice group of people, some women, some men, all older. We all hung out, went to the gym. We all did stuff. We had men's breakfast. We took a lot of meetings into service, into Ellendale, and into the jails, and into rehabs and different things. We had a great group of guys, and a lot of those guys were also in my outpatient program. So it was just, I went from a shit life to an amazing life in one night. And it was great, and my God, but the time starts to show up, and, one day we get a little bit better, right? One day I can't make men's breakfast, I got plans. I can't make Ellendale tonight because I'm going on a date, right? whatever it is, I'm going to do something, right? Because whatever this recovery is doing, it's provided me many opportunities. It is amazing, if we can just put down the drugs and the alcohol, the opportunities that just start to show up. My buddy Matt says, if you're sober, man, you can do anything you want. You could run for president. He's right. I wouldn't do that now, but it gives you so many opportunities. And then you start to build a life, and then you meet people, and all of a sudden you start doing a little more of that and a little less than this. And then you start to grow and fall away from the program. And then you just sort of disappear, and then you know, it all comes back. But that's why it says that. I haven't had the spiritual awakening, but the funny thing is I hadn't had no spiritual awakening. You know, it just got better. You know, I was still, shucking and jiving, manipulating, doing all the little things that I was doing. I hadn't really worked any program, but I wasn't drinking, right? What's the unwritten steps? Don't drink, go to a lot of meetings, and just do the best you can. That's what I was doing. But the do the best you can part wasn't that good. And it was still, my behavior would still create worry and fear and shame. But to just keep hanging in there, right? Just keep pressing on. And then, of course, drinking. And then coming back in 06. And that's when I woke up to an empty house. You know, everything I had worked for, everything that sobriety had brought me, everything that recovery had allowed me to have was all taken away. And I woke up to that empty house. And that was August 24th, 2006, 2 days before my son's birthday. And I went up to York, Pennsylvania, and I went to that rehab, and I just thought I had it all figured out. And I was walking out the door, and the lady said, I just want you to know you're still full of shit. And I said, she don't know me. She was right. Right, still taking the pain pills. 2 years, right, into that recovery. And, you know, the shit hit the fan again because of my behavior on pain pills and the things that I would say and how I would act at work, and, you know, it just all fucking hit the wall, and I had to admit. But to me, I'm like, what am I admitting? I had a back injury, so I should be able to take these pain pills, and that's just not the case. And Matt's like, dude, if you don't change your sobriety date, first of all, you can't take those anymore. And I was like, yes, of course, because, you know, I had said something or done something, and, you know, people were like, what's the matter with you? And, of course, I was high on pain pills, and I was embarrassed and ashamed once again. You know, another act of providence had come upon me, and I'd had a few acts of providence under the influence of pain pills that I ignored. But this one I didn't. I called my sponsor and I told him what had happened. And he says, listen, you can't take pain pills anymore. One. And two, you have to change your sobriety date. And I had just like gotten 2 years. I was like, no. He's like, if you don't change your sobriety date, you'll never find serenity. I said, okay. Let's do it again. And that was December 22nd, 2008. It was a tough Christmas that year. But, you know, it's all about, you know, this continuous grind. And, you know, just when I think I have it figured out, I really don't. And just when I think I don't need to go to meetings, I do. And if it's for any reason other than to be there for the next alcoholic, then that's why. And like I said at the meeting yesterday, I didn't want to come to this meeting today. You know, I got a great life. I was hanging out with my wife. I'm doing things, cutting grass. I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor. And of course, at noon, and yesterday, you know, yesterday I went to see my dad. I went early because I'm like, I got to be back early. I got to get to the meeting. And the fact is, I got to be there. You know, that's my job, to be there for the next alcoholic, because I didn't feel like going. And it's subtle, man. The spirits that want me back into the mud are super subtle. And they just sort of, you know, hang out, wait. And they hit me when I'm not expecting it. You know, I usually just go into the Monday, Wednesday, Friday meeting. I've sort of dropped off from the Friday meeting. Haven't been doing that one. So now I'm just doing Monday and Wednesday. That may be the beginning. That might be the beginning of me drinking again. And then it's that decision where, you know, I haven't had a drink for a long time, but have I lied? Shit. If I had to pick up a coin every time I lied, I'd be, you know. And they're not like, you know, yeah, I own a Mercedes or something, but it's just like, you know, subtle. Subtle. Actually, you know, I feel really fantastic. I hate to admit that I've even had struggles with these things. I am not perfect, but I actually have been paying a lot of attention to them. I've been paying attention to a lot of the situations that I get myself in that I have to say, you know, whether it's lying or just not saying anything at all. You know, I've become much better at it. And this is many, 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 many years of being in recovery, right? Many coins. I said it yesterday, man. I feel like these steps have really started to become clearer and started to work in my life in the last 3 years. I've been sober for 18 years. And this guy up there is from Founders Day from Akron, Ohio, you know, who's, you know, been through every crevice and nook of Bill and Bob's houses and can tell you every step, you know, have 5 years. I'm like, dude, you have no idea the journey. Not that because I can guarantee you, I'm not done with the journey either. But like I said yesterday, I'm not really that. I mean, I don't particularly give a shit about Bill and Bob's house. The house that I was in last night, yesterday, the fucking dry dock, I care more about that house than I do Bill and Bob's Akron, Ohio house. Right? Because I've seen the faces come and I've seen the faces go, and I just know that that little house up the street from my house right now has saved a lot of lives and lost a lot as well. It's pretty awesome. But the moral of the story is, you know, you got to do service. Find service work. Service work keeps us sober. And I remember early on, I just wanted a service job. And then I remember someone said, you want to take the coffee commitment? And I just was like, you betcha. And I got the key. And I would get there an hour early. And I would have the coffee made. And I would buy some cheap cookies. And I would put the freaking spoon in the cup with water. And I had that bitch set up perfect. And then afterwards, I'd take it all down, and then I would lock up, and I would go home, and I would do it again next week. And it just made me feel like I was part of something for the first time. Service work saves. All right, let's see what we can do here. I got people trying to make appointments. Back off. All right. Oh, no. What do we want this? Daily reflection. Okay, August 20th, that's today, toward emotional freedom. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. I'm going to read that again. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been immediate cause of our woes. Wow. Since defective relations, character defective? Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes. Yes, right? Including our alcoholism, right? I said this the other day. I wish my only problem was alcohol, right? But it's the defective relations with other human beings that have been my problems. Oh, and also I drink and do drugs, right? Including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. Wow, 12 steps, 12 tradition. Willingness is a peculiar thing for me in that over a period of time, it seems to come first with awareness, but with a feeling of discomfort making me want to take some action. As I reflected on taking the eighth step, my willingness to make amends to others came as a desire for forgiveness and others and myself. I felt forgiveness towards others, and I became aware of my part in the difficulties of relationships. I wanted to feel the peace and serenity described in the promises. From working the first seven steps, I became aware of whom I had harmed, that I had been my own worst enemy. In order to restore my relationships with my fellow human beings, I knew I would have to change. I wanted to learn to live in harmony with myself and others so that I could also live in emotional freedom. Yes, the beginning of the end to my isolation from my fellows and from God came when I wrote my 8-step list, right? Like my buddy Gary says, it's not who I am, but I am capable of that. All right, listen, I hope everyone has a great day. I will catch you later. Bye. You keep me back.